Good afternoon, everyone. Depending on what time zone you're in, I guess some people are still in the morning. This is Pete Lowenstein coming to you from Washington, and welcome to our chance to get together today and talk a bit about where we are with our Press Forward project. The activities on all the refurbishments that are taking place, both for upgrades at the station, as well as many of the upgrades that are being made now here at the Network Operating Center, the NOC, and plans for the new building are all sort of converging at this point, and we're excited about the progress we've made and appreciate all the help and energy you folks at stations have put into building the new equipment into your local operations. And we are looking forward now to, over the next number of months, getting to a point where we can start phasing out the main use of the old gear and having the new gear that we've been sending to you now for a while become the stuff you rely on going forward for day-to-day operations. Joining me here in the studio today, we have a whole bunch of folks from our PRSS staff that cover operations and engineering, that are here from our distribution information services area. And we are hoping that with the folks who are here, we can help answer any questions you have, bring you up to date on any of the latest happenings that we feel important that you make note of if you haven't already. And I look forward to a good conversation. We have a number of ways you can participate. You can, first of all, call us to participate today at 877-898-2400. That's 877-898-2400. And when you do, you'll be coming into a conference bridge, and you'll be asked a couple of questions. First, they'll ask you to enter the conference ID, followed by the pound sign, and the conference ID is 2609, 2609, and then hit the pound key, and you will hear a voice come on and tell you to either press 1 or 2, and you should press 2. Then you will be asked to enter the password, and don't tell any of your friends, but the password for today's call is 6431, 6431. That way you will get into the conference bridge, and we'll be able to have actually hear your dulcet tones wafting through the studio here, and we can have a back-and-forth conversation with you. The other way you can participate, and some have started this process already, is to send us an email. You can email your questions to prssforward@npr.org, prssforward@npr.org. And those questions that come in through that route will be directed into the studio here, and I'll be able to share the question with all the folks in the room, and we'll be able to answer you without necessarily having to have you call into the bridge. So one more time, the number to call in is 877-898-2400. The conference ID is 2609. Then you should press a 2 to signify you are not the host. And then finally, enter the password 6431 for email, prssforward@npr.org. So with that, let me begin by turning things over to Dick Colas, who is our Director of Operations and Engineering for the PRSS. And Dick, you want to sort of start us down the path of talking about, I guess, maybe one of the most important current activities is the receiver adoption phase, but I know there's lots of other stuff you want to share as well, so I'll turn it over to you to sort of pick it up.
Thanks, Pete, and hello, everyone. If you hear a bunch of scratchy voices today, the pollen level in D.C. is through the ceiling, and almost all of us have allergies, so there'll be a lot of throat clearing here and there, and we apologize in advance. we are still into the Block M project, but really the only thing left to do there is for stations to adopt the new equipment, start running them, getting used to them, and at this time you can put them on the air if you like. We still support the SR Pros and will do so till the end of August. But word to the wise, by the end of August, we will shut down the portal services to the SR Pros, except for Qs. There'll be no choices for programming to appear on those receivers. All of that programming will, of course, appear on the new 4104s. The big project we're involved in now is known as Block O, and Block O is really moving a whole set of equipment from this building to our new building, building new spaces in that building, and adding a lot of great new features that are coming to the NOC and coming to the way we do business in that arena. Currently, we are building the transmission systems and the Content Depot head-end systems locally in a building that's very close to the current headquarter building. And we will have it all up and running and rung out. And then sometime next October, the target date is October 1st, we will move that equipment in its racks all down the street to the new building, pop it in place, and hopefully put it together pretty quickly. We plan to spend about 6 months in the new building, tweaking systems, building new antenna farms. Ralph's going to talk a little bit about the new NOC and how unique that is, and that's really an exciting project. And Ralph and I will be at the PREC also this year, and Ralph will give you sort of an extended tour of what's going on in the new NOC and the new video wall and how we choose to control and monitor those equipment, that equipment. And it's really a paradigm shift for us, and it's going to be very interesting. Block V is our ground equipment upgrade, and that's been honchoed by project manager Kevin Thomas, who has done this before and done it well, and he has a very good staff of PMs and engineers to work with to keep this project on schedule and on budget. So far, it looks really good. We have people out in the field and people talking to stations all the time, and those stations who need services will receive them, and they'll be notified by Kevin's office, and you probably know who you are if you've talked to him already. And Block E, of course, is just the overall effort of moving NPR's back offices, front offices, almost everything that's non-technical to the new building, and that includes all of the PRSS services that are not part of the new NOC or part of the antenna farm. So that's where we are, and we're on schedule, on budget. And we have a lot to do. It's going to be a very intense year, but we're feeling very good about our schedule. Pete?
Okay, very good. I'm hoping that everybody out there has at least located the boxes that we've been shipping to you since last fall. I'm actually hoping most of you have unpacked them and actually have had the receivers installed and have been getting familiar with how they are different from the ones we've used before. And in fact, I think many of you have already started to actually use them and consider them your primary device for picking up and delivering out to your audiences the PRSS-delivered programming. We know that there are still many folks who are still very much in that adoption phase, and there's a number of months left, I guess, to complete all this. But it is something that if you haven't started yet, we're here to help you. Give us a call. Who has the help desk number handy?
800-971-SOSS.
7677.
And as Scott says, that's 7677 for those of you like me who don't care for the acronyms.
Right. We have plenty of people who are here to specifically help you with this. They've got a lot of water under that bridge already because we've had stations who have been working with us. And I guess with every new station that we've worked with, we learn a little bit more in intelligence about what some of the challenges are for doing this. But I take it basically it's been a pretty smooth process this time around compared to some other ones we've done in the past where there's been much more fundamental change in the way we do things.
Yeah, that's right. We learned a lot from Content Depot number one, and hopefully we have incorporated most, if not all, those lessons in this rollout.
But we are learning new stuff every day. And we'll learn some more today, I'm sure, if you give us a call. We're at 877-898-2400. That's the number to hook into our bridge. When you join in at that number, you will be asked to put in a conference ID, 2609. Then you should enter 2 after you're prompted to indicate you're not the host. And finally, enter the password when prompted for 6431. We also have our email question line here, which you can submit questions to. We have a number of them coming in now, and I'll get to those in just a second. That route into the conference is prssforward@npr.org. So why don't we start with a question that's coming in from our email line, and the first one comes from Craig Johnson at WPSU. And let's see, let me go back and I'm looking at a screen here. Okay, the question from Craig is, at WPSU-FM, they are needing detailed instructions on how to get a total of 6 different streams from their 2 IDC SFX-4104 receivers, and how to make sure that they see all 6 of those different choices for those streams under the what is called the V2 equipment on the subscription page of the Content Depot. So right now, apparently, if I'm reading this correctly, they are currently seeing on that V2 display a row of checkboxes that are labeled 1 through 4, and then under that row there's another row of checkboxes labeled 1 through 4. And he gives some further detail on that, but he basically is saying they're running 3 separate radio stations using all 6 of those stream decoders throughout each of the 24 hours of the day. And before they can switch over from the old to the new style receivers, they have to have a way to get at all 6 of their existing streams to put them on the air. So that's his basic question, is how does he go about doing that?
Well, I'll turn it over to Mark, but this is a unique question, and we haven't seen it before. So I'll give it to Mark to answer.
Thank you. Well, each of the new SFX-4104s has 4 audio outputs. And that is the 4 checkboxes that you see, first row for your first receiver and the second row for your second receiver. So when you subscribe to a program, you go down there to the boxes and you decide which output on which receiver you want to see the program come out, and check that box. Now, what I suspect might be happening here is that there is a business rule, in effect, that for a given subscription, you can only check 2 of those 8 boxes. You can put check two boxes on a single chassis or 1 on each, but you can only take 2 streams of a given program for your subscription. So if you need to send a single program to more than 2 destinations, you have to do that downstream. But those boxes there represent the 8 audio channels that you have available from the 8 different outputs, and you can assign that given subscription to any 2 of those 8.
And a couple of things with that. This is Scott Bridgewater. If the six old style receivers, in other words, the original 12 outputs, were there when we shipped the receivers to you, those would have actually been assigned 2 ports on your new receivers. And there's a predictable way of doing that, and rather than trying to do mental images of how this works, I'll direct you at the FAQ or to send email to prsshelp@npr.org. And that will show you actually where your number 5 and number 6 receiver subscriptions should have gone. And on the 2 per, that's 2 per generation, by the way. So you can subscribe each program to up to 2 ports on either your SR2000 Pros or your Pro Audios. Just to clarify that a little bit. So there.
Okay. Any other... I think the bottom line might be that if that doesn't satisfy what you need on this, Craig, that you can call our PRSS helpline, and we will try and work that through with you. And that number for you and for others is 800-971
No, that's SOSS.
I'm sorry.
We're now going to write this on the paper here, so 7677.
Your SOSS looks like 5055. So I'd like to, I wonder what your income tax return looks like.
It's code. It's code.
All right, let me try that one more time. 800-971-7677. 800-971-7677. If you could write, we'd be fine. If I could read, we'd be fine. So, you know.
Yin and yang.
All right. So, again, let's move to another question that we don't have any calls, right, at this point? Okay. Let me move to another incoming email question. This is about the new receivers. And this one comes from Lauren Campbell at Prairie Public Broadcasting. And Lauren is curious to know, will there be an updated set of configuration instructions for interfacing the storage receiver to automation systems? They've been on, apparently, with support for several issues, and those issues that they've been online with have not been covered in the current documents. Who would like to take that one? Mark?
Okay.
Scott, Martin, rock, paper.
I think that setting up the new receivers generally interface to your automation system the same way the old ones do.
That's
matter
correct.
Of yep. setting up the IP address of the Ethernet port and getting it into your station's LAN, and then the receiver behaves exactly the same way as the old one. So you whatever automation system you're using, whatever software you're using to harvest the files off the receiver should work the same way with the new receiver as soon as you get the IP addresses correct. And the one issue that we've seen on a number of the receivers in the field being that the port negotiations on some of them are not set up correctly, so there is a question in the FAQ about how to set your Ethernet ports to auto-negotiate, which is the way they should have been set all along. Some of them came out of the factory not set that way. Mm-hmm. So that's covered in the FAQ, but you need to go in to the configuration screen using your web browser and set the Ethernet ports for auto-negotiate.
Yeah, and that's actually solved about 80% of the questions that have come in over the last few weeks as people are installing their receivers. There is another configuration issue that's also called out in the frequently asked question list, too, and that is some of the new receivers are not set to read and write to their shares, and that's going to cause some odd behavior when you're connecting to an automation system, or at least possibly could. So I would really encourage everybody to go to the FAQs and check those, because that's really covering most, if not all, the questions that we've been getting so far.
Yeah, and we have discovered, Kevin has, that the receivers of different production lines and different times sometimes come out with different configurations, and that was an error at the factory. So if you need any additional help, just call the helpline, and we'll get somebody on the phone for you.
Okay, and while we're answering that question for Lauren, he followed up with another one, which was, will breaking news notification change in any way? Are there any new options in what we're laying out?
We're not sure about breaking news. We are talking about other things, however, where the SR Pros would become very handy for additional services, and we've been talking to FEMA to carry some of their alert messages, and we've also been talking with news about the Squawk channel quite possibly migrating to the SR Pro as a fixed channel. Breaking news, I don't think we have an answer on whether that will move or not yet.
Well, it will continue to be a subscribed stream just like it is now.
It's just going to be a Content Depot screen then.
Yeah, I think that's the idea. I mean, it does both, carries the audio content obviously, and the relays are configured on that particular stream for the Squawk net, which is not the same as the Squawk channel.
Right.
So, no particular reason for that one to change.
Okay. Hope that answers your question.
Okay, thank you, Lauren. And let's remind you once again, our line is open, and you can call us on 877-898-2400. Conference ID is 2609, and the password is 6431. Also, our email address for questions is prssforward@npr.org. So we have another incoming on our email here, which is coming in from, let's see, it's from Michael Kluger at WNYE. And Michael is asking, do the new receivers correct the issue of the LNB frequency offset sometimes needing to be manually reset when the carrier drops and then comes back up, such as when there's, say, an uplink switch between the main NOC and the BU NOC?
Yes.
Okay, next question.
Yeah, that problem seems to be taken care of in the new receiver.
Yeah, the tuners in the new receivers are completely new technology. Also, each of the new devices has two RF head ends in it, so you're getting the streams carrier and the files carrier at the same time. But yeah, the problem with the with the LNB offset wandering off to the end of its range when the carrier drops is gone.
Very good. Okay, still no incoming calls, so we'll move to the next email question we have. This is coming in from Robin Cross. Hi, Robin. Robin's out in Kansas City at KCUR, and Robin has a couple of questions. Let's see here. He would like, well, both questions and requests. He'd like priority mail only when the uplink or the satellite is down. And he doesn't care for any programming changes or problems. That's number one. That's, I think, a question. Or can I arrange it to be
certainly
that way?
Certainly a comment.
Yeah, certainly. Number two is on fixed tuning. Without it, he says that KCUR must go through subscribing to each of the NPR top of the news hours, C24 and BBC, and multiply that times, say, 400 stations is a lot of wasted time. That, not to mention that they basically must be subscribed as well. So, who would like to sort of comment?
Are you
on
up
that?
To date on the?
Yeah,
on the fixed tune.
Yeah.
No.
No, it's
well.
Let's restate the question because I'm not very clear on the first point.
Okay, well, it seems as though the question is, I'll leave the priority mail alone for a minute and come back to that. This is really, his specific question is fixed tune. Without it, KCUR must go through subscribing to each of NPR's top of the news, top of the hour newscasts, C24 and BBC. And then to multiply that by, say, 400 stations is a lot of wasted time. Not to mention that... which is basically it's got to be subscribed to as well for the BNC.
That is the current plan, and it's been forwarded from all of the requirements we had for the first system. I don't know if that will change, but anything's possible. But for the time being, that's the way it is.
Can you maybe say a little more about what the manual tuning on the old legacy receivers is really there for backup purposes only. So that really doesn't give you any of the automated functions and all those things.
Yeah, there will not be any subscription services to the SR Pros
beginning
at the end of August. We haven't set a firm date yet, but that's our target date, and we certainly will publish it. The fixed tune issue with the 4104s is a much more difficult thing to address in a simple statement. It's such an intelligent box. It has a great processor. It runs a number of routines simultaneously. It can do wonderful things. One of those things it can do is called split copy, and that takes a combination of hard drive and streaming working together and being timed to produce the copy and the live stream in a nice, neat pattern. So we still have really good time post. And to self-tune, you would limit yourself in a number of ways. One, you couldn't participate in that. And secondly, you would not pick up any new updates for the receiver because the receiver has to be tuned and in contact with the portal. Is there anything more to that question?
The question suggests to me that he's right now he's fixed tuning the programs without subscribing to them.
Right.
And that's not the intent.
So I'm interpreting that as well. That this means that the fact that he's been running them in fixed tune mode on his old receivers means that now to use the new receivers he has to actually go in and subscribe to all those things he's never subscribed to before.
That's absolutely true.
And one of the other points I think that we often forget, because we all here take it for granted, but one of the fundamental reasons that's important to have the new receivers online and hooked into the system and with the subscription feature being a piece of that, is that if there was a way to put those receivers into manual mode and you ran them that way, you would essentially be completely disconnected from all the network services. All you would get is an audio stream. And there's a lot of stuff that those receivers are now and in the future going to be doing that need to really be connected into the network. And basically, if it's not in that mode, it is completely invisible and unknown to the system. So and it doesn't get any of the benefits that has gone into building the new receivers. So
yeah, and one of the benefits, and I'll just touch on this, is that this receiver can do a number of tasks. One of them is something we're calling data casting, where we can send individual data streams through the receiver that has no impact on audio right. or recording functionality or anything. It's completely independent from your air feeds, but it could be used for future revenue generation for both the PRSS and your local station. So there's a lot of benefits to being plugged in, as we say, and we just made a decision that this was the best service we could offer to the entire network.
Okay, let's see if there's any. And then there's two more questions from Robin. One is, where is Squawk going? Why is it not built in? That's a two-parter. And then the last one, which we can come back to, is are you presenting at the PREC, a PRE? And I think the answer, I can answer that one, yes. So back up to the Squawk channel.
Well, we are talking with our partners at NPR, and we're considering moving the Squawk channel from the Comstream ABR 700s to the SR Pros when they become available. And we're not considering these receivers available until at least we commission the system and therefore turn off the SR Pro automation systems.
And one other thing that you need to keep in that a lot of people don't realize is that the Squawk channel is a private channel that NPR News leases from us. And as such, we cannot tell them how to do it. We can work with them to come up with the best solution. But ultimately, they're the ones who have to make the decision that, yes, we want to pick up and move over to this to that method.
And I know we don't have a firm date yet for when that transition would have been completed, but do you have a rough period of time within which you think we'll be at that stage when the old legacy receivers will be officially moved into secondary status?
Yeah, we're shooting for before Labor Day, and that could be the end of August. We want to allow enough time for those holiday people not to experience any new surprises. Yeah. So it'll be several weeks before Labor Day is our latest guess, and as I said, we'll set a firm date, get the message out soon.
Good. Okay. Pardon me. My pollen's getting me, too, now. Let's move on to the next. Is there anything further to say about the priority mail? Only when satellite uplinks, or whether the satellite or the uplink is down?
The only thing to point out about that is that that's a reaction to different categories of stuff going into the same category of delivery. So urgent programming stuff is going into the same bucket as the uplink satellite down and stuff, so it's actually hard to separate those things out. It's more of an operational problem than a technical problem.
And I take it there's not any easy way to sort that out at the individual end.
At the receiving end. You know, there are tools that you know, you can do in your email client that would change the different kinds of notifications that you would get. But it's really mostly it's difficult for a mailer to detect that says, no, this is really important for this group of people versus, oh, this is really important for that group of people. In the all fitting under the same heading of a type 1 or type 3 or whatever message. So that's like I said, it's more of an operational and a producer and system training issue than it is a technical issue.
And I guess to filter it at the receiving end would require a degree of pretty tight consistency on how messages are formatted and mm-hmm. headered and those sorts of things. Now, I think we do a lot of that here, but I'm not sure if a lot of these messages that Robin is concerned about are coming right. from external producing sources, whether or not they have the same right. level of discipline or could adopt that.
And that's correct. And I would encourage Robin to drop us a note at PRSS Help, and with his specific, I want this but not that, and maybe we could give him a little help with that.
Okay. Good. All righty. And still no calls, but we have more questions coming in online. This one's from Victoria St. John up in Vermont. Hi, Victoria. And Victoria's question is, when is the cutoff date for the old receivers? I think we may have just talked about that.
Yeah.
Dates for completion of the rollout. But it's an opportunity to reinforce, again, what you just said.
Again, we are shooting for the end of August several weeks before Labor Day. So it's sometime right after the middle of August. We'll set the date firmly after we talk to all the parties that are involved in this and make sure that we're certain about that date and publish it repeatedly.
Okay. All right, here's a good one for you. This is from Ray Lentz in WHRO. And Ray says his receivers are not working, although they did for a while. They are, as far as he can tell, properly configured as they were working, and after asking for help in the past few months, he's yet to hear back. So to whom should he speak to about getting this fixed?
Well, I'm sorry to hear that.
Usually, yeah.
The trouble tickets usually get addressed fairly quickly. Can you shed any light on this, Mark?
I can tell you a little bit further on this one part here. He says, as far as he can tell, they are tuning. The audio lights are flashing, but there's no audio from the live wire or from the AES outputs on either receiver. That might be a clue.
Well, there is a particular problem that we've had reported from a few stations, not a lot, that sounds very much like this. He may have some receivers that are doing that. If he has opened a trouble ticket with the help desk and has not heard back, Ralph's going to get very upset because Ralph polices that.
And nags the daylights out of everybody to get these things closed.
So I don't have a list of open tickets available to me, but I'll go look and see if he's got one that's open that hasn't been dealt with.
And we'll respond to him as quickly as we can.
And if he doesn't have an open ticket, that's what he needs to do, because that will generate a warranty exchange of the receivers, that usually happens very quickly once the ticket's open.
And I'm going to jump in for a moment. This is Ralph saying that, as far as this is concerned, posting to PubTech or posting to DubNet isn't going to get things fixed. Sending us an email to the PRSS help desk, PRSS help at npr.org, or calling us at 800-971-7677 is the better way to get your problem resolved. Trust me. And if you don't hear, then, again, send me a note at rwoods@npr.org, and I'll go get out my sledgehammer and track it down.
Well, so the bad news is, it sounds like if we've dropped the ball somehow, we need to pick that up and get right back on this. But the good news is, it sounds like what you're experiencing is something that at least we've had some other reports of, we probably know how to help you get that fixed.
Well, we're working closely with the vendors on this, and Doug Bevington has been spending a great deal of time on this issue. We will get it licked. We don't expect that to take too long, but we will put out some kind of notice when that problem has been cleared.
And is this, just one quick follow-up on that, is this something that we think is in all of the receivers, or is it in maybe a certain batch or something like that?
It's hard to tell.
We don't know yet, I guess.
It's hard to tell.
Yeah.
There aren't that many cases to begin with.
Okay. Okay. We have another email question that has come in. This one's from Henry Cook. And let's see. Henry's in Richmond at WCVE. And his question is, the conflict notification problem from earlier this month, has it been resolved? He hadn't made any subscription changes since then until today, and subscribing to this interconnect, as it turns out, and he did not receive a conflict alert from the depot messaging on this occasion. He shouldn't have, but he wasn't sure whether that was because the original problem had been fixed or because it just turned out they didn't get the notice today.
I can tell you that may not realize this, but there's actually two different types of conflict notifications, one of which was out, had been out for a while and was working just fine till they released the second one, and in the course of that, they broke the first one. So as a result, we've shut the first level down, so the only one you should be seeing right now has to do with your 4104, well, actually for both of them, over a longer period of time. The first one was like when you went to subscribe to something specifically, it was supposed to give you an error message. The problem with that one is that it was interpreting programs that ended at say 12 noon and a program that started at 12 noon on the same port, that was conceived as a, or perceived as a conflict, which is obviously not true. So we have are in the process of fixing that, and in one of the next releases of Content Depot updates for the portal, I expect they'll be able to take care of that. So that's why you haven't been seeing much of these anymore. And the other ones, I'm guessing, have been taken care of in terms of, you know, subscription management.
Okay. Hope that answers your question, and that was seen as good news. One more reminder here, if you'd like to call us and share with us your voice in addition to your question, you can call us on 877-898-2400. The conference ID is 2609, and the password is 6431. And our email for questions, if you prefer that route, is prssforward@npr.org. We have another question that just came in from Michael Kluger again at WNYE, and this time he's saying, for programs programs that are live with subsequent file transfer, are there any plans to eliminate the current requirement to select an audio port for live distribution if a station isn't using the live feed and only needs the file? The current requirement forces stations to tie up an audio port needlessly when they need to get the file but not the live stream, which is available as both a file and a stream. Who would like that one?
Actually, that's something that was fixed a while ago. You can simply, he just wants the file, he just wants the audio. If he goes, he puts in his subscription information and does not select a port, an audio port, it will then kick a notice back to you saying, you're not choosing an audio port, and that's correct, and you just get the file. So that's something that we've actually had for a while. So, sorry, Michael, but we got it now.
Good.
You should be all set.
Yep. Very good. Okay. And if for some reason that's not computing because you're not able to make that happen, then give us a call here and we can help figure out why it's not working for you. But it should be something that's not an issue anymore. That was something that was, I think, viewed as a really troublesome problem that we tried to fix a long time ago, or at least a while ago. Okay, now we have Eric Adler, and Eric is at WSKG, and he's writing in, I understand the issues with fixed tuning making automated systems fail. What about enabling manual tuning, but not fixed, so that the station can manually correct for when a tuning command is missed, say, for example, for solar outages or receiver rebooting during a tuning period?
It's just
not the same issue,
not
I
built
think,
into the
it?
Code. Yeah. That would take some work and some estimation by our developers to figure that out. And we'd have to look at it in terms of everything else we're offering as well.
And I think the concern that we all have had about what happens because of the dependence now on these receivers to tune properly, first of all, it's important to know, and you all can maybe share some of this if you think it's not widely known, is that the tuning processing, the methodology used for tuning these receivers is very different than the one that was used in the earlier receiver. So a lot of the problems or times when tuning commands would be corrupted or wouldn't function properly, a lot of that, we believe, and our experience so far has been eliminated because of the way the new receivers work.
Yeah, in fact, we can prove that from periods where we had trouble just recently, where we looked at the logs of our beta stations. And again, the beta stations were volunteers running 4104s, where we had access to the data from each one of those sites so we can analyze the tuning. It seemed to back that up.
And we obviously have the same concern as the stations do about if there is a tuning issue, how does a station or how does the whole system address that? And the solution that has been created for that is that we would continue to rely and have available those legacy receivers that will be available to be used in an emergency for fixed tune operation that
that's
can be
correct.
Tuned manually.
And the other thing I should add is that the way tuning is being done with the 4104s is, as Pete said, really a different set of commands altogether. It's not relying on the systems that previously took care of that chore. And we're growing up with this system too, but we find some really high reliability numbers, and we're pretty happy with what we're seeing.
Okay, back out to Kansas City. Robin Cross has sent us a note saying that Earl Johnson is there with him. Hello, Earl. we have four 2000s, and we have four streams fixed-tuned all the time. Our announcers depend on the top-of-the-hour news being there from 5 a.m. to 9 p.m. or midnight. So they bought two extra 2000s. That they're considered to have extra units and therefore don't qualify for overnight delivery. They use all four, so it says he says it took a week to receive one last week. We pay our DI fees and should get the same service no matter how many we have. So I'm not quite sure I'm understanding the issue, but maybe I need to reread this. Well,
I agree, Dick, with his last statement.
Yeah, you look kind of like you understood this. I'm going to reread it because I was concentrating on getting it out properly here. Did you understand the issue?
Not completely, no.
Okay, so I'll tell you
Mark
what.
Mark says he does.
Oh, okay, Mark does. And Robin, if we don't get this right, 877, I'm sorry, yeah, 877.
It sounds like he's talking about getting depot service on his decoders.
Mm-hmm. Ah.
And,
oh, yeah. Yeah.
And the question being, when he has a decoder down, is he entitled to overnight shipping? And I'm inferring from what he's asking that perhaps he was told he doesn't. Because he has extra receivers, so we need to look into that. I don't think that's...
I'm not aware of a rule like that, but I think we do need to look into
it. Well, the only rule that I'm aware of is that we check with everybody to say, are you in an off-air situation?
Mm-hmm.
In other words, is there any workaround that we can do, such as an ISDN feed, or now we have some streaming services available that we can get things to you. And, you know, to keep you whole, keep you running. And in that case, it's a way of getting around, you know, a failed receiver. So that may have been what he came up against. Somebody asked the question and interpreted his answer as, well, no, I've got other receivers, but here. And they said, oh, you're not off air, so therefore.
Right. So it may overnight delivery may be the key operative thing here that he was hearing back that we wouldn't do overnight delivery of a replacement because he did have other receivers available. May be it.
Other opportunities. Yeah, and that does ring a bell with the depot guys because they have to manage a pretty hefty shipping budget as well, and you guys aren't the only ones who have had cutbacks in budgets.
Well, again, so if we're not interpreting your question right, Robin, give us a call and let's talk about this. But it seems like, I mean, I don't think any of us here connected with the notion that you were being denied service.
Yeah.
But I think it may have been the overnight delivery of a replacement that might have been the issue here because you were, in fact, viewed to have additional receivers available to keep you going. So if we're not getting the gist of this right, give us a call.
Well, and again, to reiterate, there's also if a receiver goes down, call the NOC.
Right.
And we can, one way or the other, we should be able to restore service very quickly, either via ISDN or, as I said, we can offer you a stream.
Worst case, just dial up POTS.
That's true. That is still available.
Yeah. Okay, let's see here. Pardon my raspiness here. I think that may be the last of the incoming questions on the online.
I think Ralph has volunteered to do his Pavarotti imitation to fill in some time. Actually, if we do have a few minutes, I'd like to whet people's curiosity about the presentation we're making at the PREC in Las Vegas in a couple of weeks.
Good.
And a lot of the time we're spending on that is to discuss an idea that Ralph really generated and we all got behind and supported, and that is a system that's basically managed by a video wall. So take it away, Ralph.
Yeah, this was something, and I won't lay total claim to this. I'm very good at stealing other people's ideas.
Yeah, we know.
And this was something we were in the course of developing the ideas for the new NOC, we did took some field trips, and one of them went out to Discovery Television out in Sterling, Virginia, and they have actually a whole room that just monitors their downlink. And I saw this, you know, big, all these screens up there with about everything, you know, not just the stuff that they were downlinking, but also all sorts of parameters and other stuff to keep track of. And right now in the NOC, well, let's see, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10, 11, there's about 12 screens scattered throughout the room with various bits of information on them. And some of those are shared among several applications, so it's a matter of switching to a different one. It's like, okay, well, the trouble is, we really kind of need to see all of this stuff all at once. So the idea of the wall was so that we've got a place to put it. And in the new facility, right now all of our VU meters are, our downlink metering is done on benchmark DAs, which have little LED ladders on the front of them. So we have all these cages, buckets of DAs that are, you know, functioning not only for level control and routing, but for the display of the actual levels that are coming in. Well, with the new switch that we're putting in, we have the ability to see not only what we're going to be bringing in off the downlink side, but also to see what's going out in the first place, which is something we don't really have now. And all of this can be displayed on a video screen. It's a, you know, virtual metering. So we've got that. We've got the automation system display, what we refer to euphemistically as the departure monitor. It tells us everything that's on the 24 channels, 24 streams. Both in terms of what's on air and what's next up. We have just instituted something we call the dashboard, which has various color indicators to tell us the health of the various parts of the system. We have other monitoring tools that do the same thing. We're keeping track of ENCO recordings. All of this stuff needs to be looked at, needs to be available at a glance. And it's not possible to put it on just a single computer screen or even a pair of them. So the idea was that we needed the wall. So that's what we're designing for the new room. And the new room itself is structured to enhance the ability and to see that. Sight lines were very important. And, you know, to follow on to that, we've even, you know, given the fact that we do an awful lot of QC work in terms of checking files and stuff like that, we also needed a way for someone to be doing that, say, in the off hours when he's there by himself, or if there's, like, actually more importantly, that there's just a few people there, but to be able to keep eyes on the wall at the same time. We're actually, I'm stealing an idea from Minnesota Public Radio, who in their front entrance lobby has three of these chairs that you can just sit in and listen to their networks, and you're kind of acoustically isolated from everybody else. And I thought, well, this is a great idea. I love this. So we're going to have something we refer to as the egg chair, where which will actually be a smaller version of what Minnesota has, but it also will have an arm attached to it and a laptop so that they can get at the material that they need to monitor, but at the same time, their eyes can also be glancing at the video wall. So these are the kinds of things that we were doing to become much more of a visual thing, which is ironic for radio. And we're able to do this because the new switch is a digital switch. Therefore, there's going to be next to no patching. I mean, we've got, what, about 12 to 15 racks in the NOC right now that are just full of stuff. The DA buckets I mentioned, and not to mention quite a bit of patching. Well, all of that is all done in the router, and through various nodes and reconfigurations. So since we didn't need to provide for all of that, we can now use that space for the wall. So that's kind of a hint of what I'll be talking about in a couple of weeks.
Thanks, Ralph.
Well, while you're on the subject of the PREC, if you could maybe Dick or any of you talk maybe a bit more about what else is going to be on the agenda out there. This is coming up in just a few short weeks.
Yeah, two exactly.
Yeah, 2 weeks. And it's
the 11th and 12th of April. is the PREC itself. Our presentation is scheduled for the 11th of April. I think Mike's is too. So everyone from the PRSS who is contributing something will be on the stage on Thursday. We're going to start out with our PMO, our project manager, Anita Ginyard, who's going to take us through these projects that we've been working on for about 3 years now and show you where we are in terms of time and what's left to do on a number of projects. And we'll spend a great deal of time on what we talked about earlier, which is Block O, or building the new NOC and building the new antenna farms and rewiring everything that we need to operate at the new building. Ralph and I will be talking about things that are going on in the new building. Ralph will tell you all about the stuff he just gave you a sample of, and he's got photographs and we've got pictures. This is mostly a photo tour for us. I'll try to pull that together with what's going on with the other subsystems and what's going on the roof, and how Murphy is building our antenna farm up there, and some really interesting things like a very green roof that we had a chance to see the other day, where actually the roof will be covered in plant light. And someone called it, what was that, Mark?
Trained weeds.
Trained weeds will be growing on the roof of the new building on the fourth floor. And the building is sort of split into two pieces. The part of the building we are in is the original structure, and it has four stories, and all of the antennae will be up there. And the building in the back, which is mostly administrative and other back office stuff, goes up six floors. And we're on that fourth level. So we'll give you some pictures of that, and it's, as I said, I find it interesting, and I know I'm talking to at least some other people who may. And Doug Bevington will be there for a presentation of the 4104, and he is expert in the receiver, so he can take your questions and work with you either formally or informally from the floor.
You also mentioned that Mike, you didn't say Mike Starling, but I assumed everybody knew, but Mike Starling will be there to share a lot of the things that are happening over in the Technology Research Center and NPR Labs group, who are constantly coming up with new, neat things as well. And much of that is stuff that is collaborative to the work that we're doing in PRSS now, too. So there's a lot of synergy going on between those folks and ours and the PRSS group.
Yeah, and Mike is probably one of the most avid users or future users of our data casting services.
Yeah.
He has found a lot of interesting things for us, a lot of interesting leads for us to look at for possibilities there, and I think Mike will talk about some of that while we're out there.
I would want to remind you once again that our time is coming to an end here shortly for the hour that we had booked. We still have time to take some more either calls or email questions, but we really encourage you, if you have any kind of a question or a concern or can't figure something out, or just want to even confirm something, that you give us a call or contact our help desk. You can either do that by calling us at 800-971-7677. That's 800-971-SOSS, if you want to look at it that way, now that I know there are letters. Or you can write to us also at PRSS forward.npr@npr.org.
And we have Kevin Thomas here, who is pretty much in charge of Block V. Block V, again, is the refurbishment of the network downlink equipment, and he's working with engineers out in the field. I don't know if there are any stations online now who have questions about that, but Kevin, do you want to say a few words about what your guys are up to?
Certainly. Okay, thank you. Well, the GEUP project, Ground Equipment Update Project, as we've now gone through the thorough evaluation of 400-plus satellite interconnected stations. The engineers were looking at grading them for their condition of the downlinks, RF performance, and their ability to view the two backup satellites. What has the results of the analysis have come back, and essentially two-thirds of the network are in good shape, meeting the project requirements, with one-third of the network needing support. And at this time, we have completed the upgrade on 19 of the stations and have upgrades in process on another 28 stations. This process will continue to run through June of 2013.
Thank you. Okay. That's a good outline. Pete, you want to take us out here and remind
sure.
people of the numbers, et cetera?
All right. Well, again, I think since we're not seeing anything new coming in, that may signify that most of the people who wanted to jump in today have done so. But I'll just say again, we are always anxious to hear from you. And the PRSS help function is available to you 24/7. I know a lot of you don't necessarily come up with problems during normal business hours. That's not how it quite works. So let us hear from you if we have things. And I think the chance to, if you can get to the PREC, I hope many, if not all of you, will be there and have a chance to actually meet with our team here who will be there and actually get a much more thorough and in-depth look at a lot of this work that's going on now that largely is going to be affecting your operations as well as ours here over the next year and into the future with all the kinds of new things that we're enabling in the rollout of the new stuff. So with that, one more time, I'll give you the number to call for help if you need it. It's 800-971-7677. And again, I think the emphasis made earlier is if you have an issue, the best way to get it resolved and get it resolved quickly is to call or get into the help system here and open a trouble ticket with us. And there's a pretty decent system in place now to be able to rapidly get the right people connected with you to help you solve whatever issue you have. The fact is our system has many elements and components to it, so the requirements for help from our end here expands across a whole variety of people who might need to get involved to sort of answer the specific question you have. And by coming through that method using the help desk, we can help direct you to where we think you need to be as quickly as possible. So for that, I see no other questions coming in. Do I have one more? Oh, I do have one more. We have just a couple of minutes left. Let me see if I can do this quickly. This is again from Ray Lenz out in WHRO land. He says he had to go through program subscriptions one by one manually in order to migrate them to the new receivers, owing to the fact that neither of the two automatic migration options fit the way that they use their odd numbering of the SR2000 receivers. So for the sake of others who must yet migrate, a more flexible migration tool would be nice to have. It might be more of an NPR issue than a PRSS issue, but he says it would be great if things like the emergency action system would be carried directly on the breaking news channel with the weekly EAS tests. And also he's requesting to get maybe a utility that would run on a PC and poll the various receivers for selectable parameters and display them on a small screen. Doesn't need a big monitor, but something that would just be able to select parameters. So anyway, I have this, Ray, I know we're rushing here because we only have a minute left, but I wanted to get your questions and your comments out there, and we have them here. We will I'll let the team take a look at these and see if there are specific responses that we need to get back to you on. But we appreciate both your participation today as well as all those others who called in. So,
he should send that to PRSS help, and it will be routed to the appropriate person to take a look at it. And some of those people are in this room right now, but there is a lot going on, and the trouble ticket system is the only way we can keep things straight.
Right.
PubTech and the other listservs are nice for us. We can find out what the mood of the network is and possibly
and
where
duck.
We made mistakes. And duck, as Ralph said. But the PRSS help is really an effective communications tool, and it's our best tool to help you.
Okay, so with that, we will wrap, and thank you for helping us fill up this hour. And this is Pete Lowenstein signing off from today's Interconnect on the PRSS forward project, and we look forward to seeing you at the PREC. Thanks, everybody.